For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Also, X, post, tweet, whatever the show, at The Rob Brown Show. At The Rob Brown Show, if you want to go in that direction. As we got an X there a minute ago from Volton Johnson, Tennessee fan, by the way. He said, quote, not sure why all the hype around DJU. Look at his career numbers. He's not an All-American caliber quarterback. He's middle-of-the-road average ball thrower. Yeah. Yeah. I think that with Florida State fans. And this is going to be something that college fans, as the transfer portal and the methodologies that coaches use it, continue to adapt, continue to evolve down the line. This is something that is going to impact a lot of college football fans. That is having the necessity to manage the expectations around guys who come through the portal. I know that there are a lot of FSU guys who thought DJU is going to come in, he's finally grown up, he's finally developed, and now he's going to be Jordan Travis 2.0. And the reality is, no, he's not. No, he's not. He's not going to be that. My man is DJU now, 24 years old? 26 years? Oh, I think he's 20. Oh, he's 23. He's almost 24. He's 23 years old. He's not an 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid first year on campus, right? He's been around a couple of times. You know what DJU has in the back pocket. You know what he's capable of. The question is, how much more can you develop the guy? And more importantly, and this is why I think for transfer guys, it is less about, not all of them, but for the guys that are at the end of their career, guys that you bring in towards the end of their college football career, it is less about what can you coach into them, and it is more about how can you utilize their strengths? How can you play these guys into your system? And I do not think that that is necessarily going to be an easy thing to do. I don't think Florida State did it in week number one. I don't. I think I had a couple of criticisms. I think the offensive line was atrocious. I think the defensive line flat out embarrassed itself. I remember reading a comment by, oh gosh, who was it? One of the draft gurus a couple of days ago. I don't remember which one. And again, I don't fault somebody for getting it wrong. I get it wrong all the time. I don't fault somebody for getting it wrong. I fault someone for getting it egregiously wrong, right? I think you can be wrong in sports all the time. That's why sports gambling is a thing, because you can get it wrong. You can get it wrong as often as you get it right for most people. But there is a difference between I got it wrong and I got it egregiously wrong. One of the writers said this Florida State defensive line is going to be one of the greatest of all time. My guy, last year's defensive line was better, and I said that going into the season. But before they played Georgia Tech, last year's defensive line behind Jared Verse was better than this year's. Guys like Patrick Payton are going to be fine, but last year's was better. And that defensive line got absolutely manhandled, rocked, pushed around, and owned by the Georgia Tech offensive line. And I got good news for Florida State. So are a lot of other defensive lines this year, because Brent Key is an offensive lineman with an offensive lineman mentality that never stops. It makes perfect sense that the most violent and aggressive group on a Brent Key roster are the offensive line.
All right, I'm going to be curious, because I looked this up. After this week when everybody plays, how the starting quarterbacks who were transfer portal quarterbacks play. Because as far as that goes, I thought DJ looked pretty good. he did being a transfer quarterback. And according to AI Overview, whatever that is, there could be up to 42 power conference teams with transfer quarterbacks starting this year.
Sure.
So, I mean, a lot of guys moving to new teams. How well are they going to play in that first game?
It's going to be interesting to watch because you're exactly right. I think there's a handful of games where it's two transfer quarterbacks going after it, right? Playing against each other. Here's the thing I don't think you're going to be able to do. What I don't think you're going to be able to do is paint everybody under a broad brush that will give you an answer to the question of, are QBs, transfer portal QBs, a good or a bad thing? I think you're going to have some that look wonderful, and I think you'll have some that look like trash, and I think there's 1,000 variables that go into it. It's the natural talent. It's the how ingrained in the old culture are they, and are they able to shake that and join the new culture? Is it, are they switching playbooks dramatically or just a little? It's, are coaches comfortable changing up their play calling to match the quarterback strength? There's 1,000 variables that are going to go into whether transfer portal quarterbacks are successful or not, enough that I don't think that I don't, let's put it this way. I don't think that question is answerable because I don't think there is an answer. Are transfer portal quarterbacks a good idea? Some of them will be and some of them won't be.
By the way, I didn't say a good or bad idea. What I'm saying is I think a good portion of them are going to struggle in the first game. And all that considered, I want to compare how these other quarterbacks do to DJ and how well he played. Will they play as well or better, or will they play worse? And you're right, it's a team-by-team basis on whether the each individual grasps or if the plays are similar to what they came from. But I'm curious about that. And if it becomes a struggle that most transfer quarterbacks fail, which they can in the case that you were talking about when two are playing each other, will that start to stymie quarterbacks moving places?
That's a great question. It's a great question. And we'll find out. I'll
pretty
tell
proud.
You.
I, nearly 30 years
it's good
radio,
use of stymie.
I have never used the word stymie.
It's a good use of that word in that spot. And I'll tell you some places that we are, some places that we're going to find out. We're going to find out with the Oregon Ducks. Dylan Gabriel transfers up from Oklahoma.
That's also going to find out with Ohio State.
Find out with Ohio State. You'll find out with Oregon. There are some top schools with transfer, like national championship competitors that have transfer portal quarterbacks.
Well, until last week, there were people who thought Florida State might be one of them.
There was one more until last week. For the record, and again, just because
they can still make the playoff.
Hear that? That's me patting myself on the back.
Yeah, but you also, even with all the weight you lost, you still had to push your elbow to get your arm back there.
I can get there.
Oh, you just do the Ciampa thing. You just got to go. I mean, there you go. I mean, you don't have to get deep in the back.
Listen, I deserve a deep backpack.
Would you like me?
Backpack. No, I don't need to get Gunther'd across the trapezius.
Which would hurt a lot worse than the chest, I think, because you don't see it coming.
I don't know, man. I'm a lot softer in the chest. I gotta get back in the gym because I got a saggy ass. All right. I gotta get back in the gym. No, I think that you're going to see a lot of transfer portal quarterbacks succeed and a lot fail. But like I said, this is one of the things that I love the most about football is that it is a sport that is simple in concept. Take this ball and go X yards that way and cross that goal line. But it is complicated with how many moving parts have to go right. One guy getting it wrong can blow up a play where 10 guys get it perfect. Right? That's why we love football. So for me, this is why I've landed on DJ Uiagalelei was fine. And he is fine. He's fine. He's not great. He's not bad. The part of the thing at Clemson was the same thing. He was fine. Was he good enough to win a national championship? If he's on a team that is good enough to win a national championship, yes. Is he good enough to pick up the pieces? You know who he reminds me of? J.J. McCarthy last year. Was J.J. McCarthy good enough to win a national championship? I mean, clearly, yes. But I don't think it was because J.J. McCarthy was special. I think it's because the Michigan Wolverines built a bruiser of an offensive line, built a bruiser of a run game behind Blake Corum. And maybe they had a little help from the audio-visual department.
Yeah, I read that Connor Stallions thing come out tomorrow.
It is coming out tomorrow. And while I will be hosting BetMGM tonight, which you can hear me live on this station from 7 to 11 tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday, filling in for Brad Evans, who is the new host of BetMGM tonight, as my friends Trista and Nick announced last week that they are leaving to move on to future endeavors. And I love them. Taylor Swift heart hands emoji. I will miss them tremendously. I'm very happy for their future endeavors. But that just gives old Uncle Rob Brown the call in from the bullpen to fill in alongside Ryan Horvath the next couple of nights. Looking forward to that. Next trio of nights, actually. But, you know, I think when it comes to football, the reality is you look at guys like DJ, and you go, you got to build a championship team. And then there are other quarterbacks that I think you don't have to build a championship team. You got to build a good enough team and let a great quarterback. I'll point one out to you to go back old school, just to throw in an illustration that I think is relevant. The 2013 Florida State Seminoles that beat Auburn in the national championship, Jameis Winston. That team was good. It wasn't special. That team was good. It wasn't the best team in football, but it was a good enough team that had a Jameis Winston at the helm. That team was a good enough team that had a guy in Jameis Winston that could elevate good enough to great. And then there are other teams that I think had quarterbacks that were good enough, J.J. McCarthy, but they built a great team around him, the Michigan Wolverines from last year. I think that you based it around a mauler of an offensive line. You based it around a quarterback who was good enough. You based it around a running back who was dominant, Blake Corum. All of those things combined to make a championship caliber team. So to say, and this is not what Lonzo said, to be clear, I'm more addressing the hypothetical listener who asked this question. To say that a transfer portal quarterback is a good or a bad idea, I don't think you can answer that. I think the reality is some of them will be, some of them won't be. I do think what you will have to pay attention to is how do these guys fit onto your team, right? Because I think there's a lot of guys that are going to be picked up just because they're very talented, and then you're going to bring them into a program that they don't necessarily fit what the coaching staff wants to do. And to some degree, I'm worried that might be DJ Uiagalelei. DJ's a guy that would fit very well on, and I do think Florida State thought they were going to be this. DJU is a guy that would fit very well on a team that is predicated on the run, that is a run first and run often team, and that will call him into reserve to make a pass every now and then to break up the run. And it's never going to be a Hail Mary ball. DJU does not have a long ball in his arsenal. It's just not there. He's 23 years old. He's not going to suddenly develop one this year. It's going to take some. It's not a thing. I'll tell you right now. There is not an illustrious NFL career in front of DJ Uiagalelei. When he's done at Florida State, he'll get brought into the NFL, likely as a UDFA, maybe as a 6th or 7th round draft pick. He's going to be a guy that's going to compete in preseason, not look great, probably get picked up. He'll spend a couple of years in the NFL as a practice squad quarterback, and that'll be it. All right? Because he doesn't have a long ball. He doesn't have a threat over the top. NFL defenses will feast on that. At the college level, I can cover that up with an excellent run game. And I'm not saying Florida State doesn't have one. I'm saying they certainly did not on Saturday. And it killed DJ. Because without the run game and the threat of it, Georgia Tech's defense, by just winning the offensive line with their defensive line, they took the opportunity to put extra guys back and make sure that the easy ones weren't there for DJ. So he had to go underneath. A lot of dink and dunk, a lot of checkdowns, a lot of short passes, and then they had to rely on the Yak Daddies to get something done. Well, they ain't got Keon Coleman. They don't have Johnny Wilson anymore. They got a couple of guys who, and by the way, they're one of their top receivers, Destin Hill, out for the season, which took away a big chunk of your DJU can hit somebody if they're running butt naked open down the field. Then he'd probably drop it in there. But if there's a defensive back anywhere, I knew DJ missed two throws that he sailed onto the sideline to open guys. I know he missed one throw on a deep ball that was woefully overthrown. And I know he missed one guy who was wide open on a deep ball that was woefully underthrown. And when you combined all of those things, all of a sudden, DJ's passing numbers weren't what you wanted them to be. Exactly what I thought they were going to be. And that's it. That's it. This is why I've said, transfer portal quarterbacks, are they good or they bad? You can't answer that based on literally what transfer portal quarterbacks do. Because I think half of them are going to look good, and I think half of them are going to look like crap, and I wish you the best in determining which is which. Now, some smart coaches are going to take a look and try to find what's the common thread between all the guys that were good and all the guys that were bound, all the guys that were bad, all the guys that were down. And maybe as this continues to develop, maybe we start to notice some differences. Guys who were, you know, asked to do the same thing, or guys that were this or that. Like, maybe we'll find some patterns. But I don't think we can or have yet, at least none that have jumped off the page to me. Come back. Get to segment two of hour three. I am Rob. He is Lonzo. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It's the Fan Upstate.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, let's get to a little rage. You know, you guys know how sometimes I go off on a tangent, and very frequently, unfortunately, it has to do with something that's ticked me off about one of my favorite teams, and then I go off on this tangent, and I'd go, oh, I'd feel this way even if it wasn't not about my team,
or it's something I say will also cause that.
Correct.
Yeah.
But this one's not. This one is something that I know I'm going to get behind. In fact, I'm so comfortable saying this is a tangent that I've had about one of my teams many times, and this time it's about zero of my teams. In fact, if anything, it directly impacts two players that I very much like. And I'm so comfortable in saying this that I'm going to say 96.7432% sure that Lonzo's going to agree with me on this take.
Wow.
I know. That's about as sure as you can be. Yesterday afternoon, after I got done watching a little preseason National Football League, I decided to peruse the internets and just see what was happening in all the other sports. You know what it is football season. It is officially football season, as in official football, have been played and records have been kept. But I said, you know what? There's still other sports going on. Let me take a spin around the other sports and see what else is going on in the world of other sports. So I did that. And I came across an editorial. Now, I'm not going to read the whole editorial. I am going to say that it was credited very simply to NBC Sports. And NBC Sports put up an authorless editorial, or I should say uncredited editorial. Lakers should pursue Luka Doncic as face of franchise after LeBron. Now, let's be clear about a couple of things. The Lakers are well within their right to do so.
By the way, who shouldn't pursue him as their okay?
Oh, we're coming to the gut reaction. I promise. the Lakers have every right to pursue Luka Doncic or, frankly, any other NBA superstar that they wish to do so. And Luka Doncic has the right, should he elect to do so, to spurn or accept the advances of the Los Angeles Lakers, should the Los Angeles Lakers attempt to move on Luka Doncic. All of these things are fine. Here's a problem that I have, and it's a problem that I ranted about last year, and it's a problem I got told, Rob, you're just angry because it's your team. Of course, the conversation being that the NBA already makes it hard enough for small market teams to succeed. And I know that there are those out there that will go off on rants about how that's not true. That's just the whining of small market teams who are mad that their owners can't put together a good team, that their GMs can't put together championship rosters. And my counter to that is that so? Then tell me why it's Giannis Antetokounmpo, and that's pretty much it, of small market teams that have won recent championships. Because I go back, and I would like, stop me when I get to the first small market team. Stop me when I get to the first market. Was it the Boston Celtics? No. Was it the Denver Nuggets? No. Golden State Warriors? No. Milwaukee Bucks? Yes. Was it the LA Lakers? No. Toronto Raptors? That's maybe the next argument you have. But the population, in fact, just because I'm curious, population of Toronto, Canada is 3 million people. So no, that's not a small market team. Golden State, is Cleveland a small market? Cleveland has a population of 361,000 people. I'll say yes. 2016, Cleveland Cavaliers. I would also point out, Lonzo, you may know this off the top of your head. Who was the finals MVP in the last time the Cleveland Cavaliers won an NBA final back in 2016? Do you happen to recall off the top of your head?
LeBron James.
LeBron James is exactly the correct answer. So in order for a small market team to win an NBA title, that small market team has to have a Giannis Antetokounmpo or a LeBron James. Before that, Golden State, San Antonio. San Antonio, I don't consider a small market team, but it is a 1.5 million population. That's a top 20 TV market. And that's, I think, what most people use.
What's a large population? I mean,
Toronto's got three. That's twice as many people.
Okay.
I'll put it this way. New Orleans population, 369,000. Let's see Memphis. Memphis population, 621,000. Portland's population, 635,000. Let's see Milwaukee's population, 563,000. So I'm talking about a Toronto with 3 million people versus a New Orleans with 3,500. A Portland with 3,750,000, right? I think that's the difference. Here's what I don't need. It's already stacked. It's already stacked in favor of the big market teams. And now every time that a small market team finds some success, and I don't even know that I would necessarily call Dallas a small market team. They got 1.3 million people in that market. But I would say as one of the other ways I break it down is it a basketball team in a football city? I'm going to say the Dallas Mavericks. And I would be fair. I'll give it to the San Antonio Spurs too. Are a basketball team in a football market. Probably more so Dallas than San Antonio. That's a Cowboys city. The Stars and the Mavs are allowed to succeed there or allowed to play there, but it's a Cowboys city. All right, I've been there. So, it is already difficult for a small market, or let's create a new category, a hampered team, to find success. One of the things that you must do is you must find a categorically exceptional basketball player. Whether or whether or not Zion Williamson is one of them is going to be up for debate, although I've seen some pictures of Zion. Dude is shredded right now. Dude is 10 pounds less than he was during his Duke days, but still absolutely yoked. Breakout year, Zion Williamson's going to the Hall of Fame this year, all right? But put that to the side. You got to find a Luka Doncic to come play for the Dallas Mavericks, and then you've got to hook up with a Luka Doncic on a contract that keeps him on your team for a very long time. I can't stop it. There is nothing illegal about it. There is nothing unethical about it. There is nothing wrong with it. This is 100% a I'm in my feels scenario. And I acknowledge it. I admit it. This is based entirely on emotion and nothing else. But it is aggravating as hell when every time a small market team starts to find success because they get hooked up with a franchise player, an exceptional NBA player, a Zion, a Luka, a Giannis, and immediately the big time media market starts saying, yeah, that guy should come. He should come here. Why? Because we're a big market team and we deserve him. Again, there's nothing wrong with it. Those authors have every right to write whatever podcast and blogs and vlogs and whatever else that they want to create for content. They have every right to do it. But as a small market team, it is very damn frustrating for me every time a small market team. So that you know how much this means to me, I am coming to the defense of a sports franchise from Dallas, Texas. I despise Dallas Tech. I despise all of Texas, respectfully. I despise all of Texas.
You can't despise something respectfully.
Sure I can.
No.
I respectfully despise you.
I don't think that's possible.
I disrespectfully despise you. And I do so because Dallas fans have the biggest heads in the game, right? They're the only state that's like, we'd be better than you at being a country. Yeah, okay. All right, whatever you say, Texas. Maybe get your power grid working, then we'll talk about you being your own country. All right? Point here is, I don't ever defend anything Dallas. I've been around Cowboys fans. They're the most obnoxious fans in the National Football League, hands down, bar none.
All of them?
Bar none.
Every single one of them.
Every single one of them. Even you, Cole.
I wasn't thinking of him.
Except one.
I was going to say, you're right about Cole.
Except one.
Who's riding in right about now and may actually have the radio on?
All the Dallas fans except that one. No, the point here is I don't ever defend teams from Dallas, but I'm defending the Mavs here because while, again, nothing wrong with that content creator, that podcast host, that author, whatever, penning an editorial that says my giant market team should just have the right to take whatever superstar they want from whoever, it's still obnoxious. It's already hard enough for those teams to win. It's hard enough for them to get ahead. It's hard enough for them to be competitive. And now I got to listen to and read big-time people from big-time markets going, we should just get him. Why? Because I want him. Ugh, it's very frustrating. Hey, let's take a break. When we come back, John Blau from the Post and Courier joins us to talk Clemson sports. We'll get an update on the lawsuits between Clemson and the ACC. And we will ask John, as Clemson gets set for Georgia, if the loss by Florida State changes anything for the Tigers' perspective on the ACC. That's next on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Let's get back to it. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It is the Fan Upstate, Rob Brown, and the great one, Lonzo, with you this morning. Now, we go to the phone lines, as we do at this time every single Monday morning, to welcome in from the Post and Courier, John Blau, who covers the Clemson Athletic Department for the Post and Courier, joins us here on the show to talk a little Clemson athletics. John, my man, happy Monday. Happy football season, buddy. Besides much busier, how's life?
It's pretty good. Just happy to get to actual games. Talking season's over.
You ain't lying, man. You're lying. All that can be said has been said. Time to get to football. Now let's say some more things, John Blau. I want to start it with it and get it the hell up out of the way. Florida State and the ACC were sent to court-ordered mediation down in Florida about 2 weeks ago. Shocking to exactly no one, they did not reach a resolution through that mediation. What, if anything, does this do for Clemson's approach to the legal battle between the conference and the schools?
Nothing. I mean, obviously, the judge in Florida ordered that mediation, so it was something they had to do. Obviously, you know, both sides are well apart. I'm sure the ACC's really dug in its heels, doesn't really want to, you know, give, and obviously Florida State isn't going to pay the exorbitant amount that the ACC wants them to pay, and so Clemson's kind of in the same boat. Obviously, there's going to be appeals on both sides in terms of the rulings we've already had, North Carolina and South Carolina in Clemson's cases. But I haven't even seen the actual appeals written yet. I mean, I think we're going to have a little bit of a lull here in terms of the legal process while the football season, kind of roars on here. But, as far as the mediation, obviously nothing happened down in Florida. So I don't think anything's going to really change or anything's going to happen up in South Carolina or North Carolina for Clemson either.
Yeah, I suspect the same. Have there been any updates before we get away from this? I know there's still a lot going on, a lot of paperwork, a lot of stuff behind the scenes, but has there been any change of note as far as Clemson's side of the lawsuit goes?
Yeah, no, not that I've seen. I've been refreshing the websites with the dockets every single day to see if their appeal will get logged for the North Carolina case and trying to see if the ACC will finally register their appeal of the South Carolina ruling, but have not seen either. So that's actually been somewhat notable that we haven't seen any appeals filed yet. But I'm sure at some point it will happen, and we'll see kind of what the arguments are for that.
John Blau of the Post and Courier joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. I want to get to the Clemson-Georgia game this Saturday here in just a moment, John. But before we do, Florida State upset by Georgia Tech in week 0, 24-21, your final in that one. What does, if anything, and obviously in the landscape of the 12-team playoff, a lot different approach. I think if it was a 14 playoff, if you're Clemson, you kind of take a look at that and feel a little bit better about the season. With the 12-team playoff and the ACC champ getting the auto bid now, maybe doesn't change anything. But what do you think the loss by Florida State in week 0, if anything, does for the mentality of the Clemson football team?
Yeah, obviously it puts Florida State, a little bit behind you if you can obviously get off to a good start and ACC play. Obviously, Clemson doesn't play an ACC opponent until NC State in week 3. It takes Florida State out of that driver's seat for sure, losing to Georgia Tech. Like you said, multiple ACC teams might be able to make the playoff. You probably get, the champion, then maybe another team after that if another team has a good year. And so, obviously, Clemson's got to get over that hurdle of Georgia first, but even if they lose to Georgia, I mean, it's just like for Florida State. I mean, they lost that game against Georgia Tech. They run the table. They could still very well be in the ACC title game and get into the playoff. If Clemson loses to Georgia, they have a great year in the ACC. It doesn't really matter. I think Georgia's probably going to be one of the top, 10, top 5, maybe the best team in the league or in college football. So it's it means, that Florida State isn't, off to a good start. That helps you. Maybe they're a little bit more pissed off when you play them down in Tallahassee a few weeks. But it obviously doesn't change much for Clemson. I mean, they have to, win as many games as they can. Obviously, Georgia first. And then if they can have a good year, multiple teams from the ACC can get in, and that helps everybody.
We're talking to John Blau from the Post and Courier. Joins us every Monday at this time to talk Clemson sports. Let's talk a little bit about this game coming up on Saturday. It is week 1. Some teams take a minute to get it figured out, to get that rhythm, that timing. Some teams are able to fire on all cylinders right out of the gate. What have you seen out of Clemson as far as the chemistry, the timing, and all that? Do we feel like this is an opportunity for Clemson to hit the ground running, or do you think it's going to be defend themselves for a little while they kind of figure out the offense against a very good Georgia defense?
Yeah, full transparency, we haven't seen much of anything at all. I mean, the three practices that were open to us There was zero 11-on-11 that we saw play out. So we haven't seen Clemson's offense do much of anything. We haven't seen Clemson's defense do much of anything. So, yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting right off the bat to play a team that's as talented as Georgia. Obviously, Georgia, you know, has a quarterback like Carson Beck, who's projected as potentially one of the top, if not the top, quarterback in the next draft. You have, you know, Trevor Etienne, Travis's brother, and running back. You have a bunch of really talented guys defensively. So, obviously we're not going to know until we see it on the field what either team looks like. But, I mean, obviously you assume that Georgia's very talented, and obviously you probably have to have kind of a see-it-to-believe-it type of philosophy with Clemson. I mean, they had a lot of confidence last year coming out of fall camp, and then the offense was pretty dysfunctional in that opener at Duke. And we've heard a lot of similar talk this fall, you know, from the offense in terms of their building confidence and their winning, you know, versus the defense in practice. And you know, obviously, I think after the first scrimmage, Dabo Swinney said the offensive line won the day, which is encouraging with all the players they bring back, Matt Luke at the helm there. But again, talk is talk. Until we see it, we really don't know. And obviously, Georgia, again, is a program that's recruited all kinds of 4-stars and 5-stars, particularly the front seven. So we're going to see if Clemson's offensive line is actually going to be able to win the day, and if Kate Klubnik is able to make the right decisions and all that. But we really don't know, again, until we see it.
And that was going to be my big question, is the success or failure in this game on Saturday going to be predicated by the line of scrimmage on both sides, offensive and defensive lines for Clemson? And if so, again, I know we haven't seen a ton of them so far, but do you think they've got the dogs to be able to compete with Georgia in the trenches?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I think offensively, yes, because I do think, you know, as much as Kate Klubnik has grown, or you hope he's grown, taking pressure off his shoulders is really important. I mean, last year he was trying so hard to make too much happen too many times. That's where a lot of those mistakes happen. If you could take some pressure off his shoulders, run the ball with Phil Maffa, that really does alleviate some pressure there. And so I do think that's very important in the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, on the defensive side, the one thing that concerns me is obviously we heard that Sheldon Lewis had a leg injury during one of the scrimmages. We really don't know his status going into Georgia. Jaden Lucas, another corner, has had some injuries, some dings. He's been out with and coming back with. And so what's the state of that secondary going up against a Georgia team, again, that is led by Carson Beck, a very talented quarterback. So obviously the trenches are important. Obviously you got to keep Georgia off schedule, limit Trevor Etienne's ability to bust off big plays in the run game. I think Clemson is pretty well suited to do that. But in terms of, you know, back end, how healthy is the secondary going to be, and can they kind of limit the number of big plays Georgia's able to get in the passing game? So, yeah, I would say the offensive side, absolutely. The defensive side, obviously always important, but the secondary is the thing that concerns me there on the other side of the ball.
All right, John Belisle, last one, and we'll cut you loose. 30-second answer, Clemson pulls the upset if blank.
If they're able to establish the run. Again, I don't know if that's possible against Georgia. They're a very, very talented team. But if they're able to run for over 200 yards and they don't turn the ball over, considering, again, the strength of Clemson's defense, I think they have a really good chance to win the game. Whether that's even possible, I have no idea. I don't know if Georgia's ever going to give up that many yards on the ground. But I think if you're able to do that, that's probably the surest way to win the game. But, again, we'll see if that's even possible.
John Blau covers the Clemson Tigers for the Post and Courier. You can find him on X at John_Blau, B-L-A-U. John joins us every Monday at this time to talk Clemson sports. My man, John, next time you and I talk next Monday, big dog, we'll have an actual game result to talk about.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds like fun.
You got it. John Blau from the Post and Courier joins us every Monday. We appreciate the time. Thank you very much. We got to run to a break when we come back here in just a minute. Let's dive into that game a little bit. Yeah, we still got 5.5 days before we get there. I don't care. We're talking football after Lonzo does this sports flash,
which may have some football in it. The law, The lawsuit filed by sports apparel company Fanatics against Arizona rookie wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. has been expanded to include his father, Hall of Famer Marvin Harrison Sr. Fanatics alleges the elder Harrison aided and abetted Harrison's fraud of the company and that the Harrisons misled the company into believing there was a contract between the two entities and that the two took actions to prohibit sales of merchandise afterwards. U.S. Ryder Cup captain Keegan Bradley knocked down a number of clutch putts to edge out Adam Scott, Sam Burns, and Ludvig Åberg to claim the BMW championship by one stroke. Bradley finished the event with an even par 72 on Sunday. Hey, tune in this Friday at 7 p.m. as the Burns Rebels head to Irmo to take on the Yellow Jackets. It's Burns versus Irmo right here on your home for Burns Rebels football. That would be us, the Fan, Upstate.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.